The book of Ecclesiastes has been described as Solomon's journal or diary, and his observations on life, speaking from experience and speaking from his wisdom and his fame and his importance at the time that he lived. Lessons about life that he had concluded, and it is a journal that is filled with haunting words and words that are familiar to us in our country today. And we're going to read today Ecclesiastes chapter 3, and these are words that are familiar because they have been put to music and in popular songs and popular music, and often are read in funerals, and many people find them comforting. So we're going to read beginning with Ecclesiastes chapter 3 and verse 1 down through 15. To everything there is a season, a time for every purpose under heaven, a time to be born and a time to die, a time to plant and a time to pluck what is planted, a time to kill and a time to heal, a time to break down and a time to build up, a time to weep and a time to laugh, a time to mourn and a time to dance, a time to cast away stones and a time to gather stones, a time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing, a time to gain and a time to lose, a time to keep and a time to throw away, a time to tear and a time to sow, a time to keep silence and a time to speak, a time to love and a time to hate, a time of war and a time of peace. What profit has the worker from that in which he labors? I have seen the God-given task with which the sons of men are to be occupied. He has made everything beautiful in its time. Also, he has put eternity in their hearts, except that no one can find out the work that God does from beginning to end. I know that nothing is better for them than to rejoice and to do good in their lives, and also that every man should eat and drink and enjoy the good of all his labor. It is the gift of God. I know that whatever good God does, it shall be forever. Nothing can be added to it, nothing taken from it. God does it that men should fear before him. That which is has already been, and what is to be has already been. And God requires an account of what is past. This beautiful passage here, it has a lot to say about time, and the point is being made here that everything is beautiful in its time, that there is a lot of different times in life that we all are subject to and that our lives are filled with, and that there is an appointed time for these. There is an appropriate time for these. And in their proper time, each one is beautiful in its own way. And the arrangement of the way that God has designed this is beautiful in its own way. So as we look at these verses here this morning, we'd like to try to understand what the point of it is. What is Solomon's conclusion about this as we have these observations of the times and seasons that we have in life. And so he begins here and he says that everything has its time. He says, to everything there is a season, a time for every purpose under heaven. So as he looks at life here, he is making the point here that there is an appointed time for every activity. All of the things that we do in life, there is a proper time for those. And they have, each one has a purpose, that each one seems to be there for a reason in life. Now, as he is looking at these, he says there is a time, there is a season and a time. And so these words, it means here a fixed portion of time or a point in time in order for an activity to be done or to take place. There is, for example, there is winter. There is, winter is the time for snow and ice and cold weather. And there is another time for springtime. So as we look at the seasons, we understand that God has divided time into the four seasons that we have. And in some ways, we can look at our life that we also have spring and summer and fall and winter as we go through life. And life itself is laid out for us before we ever get here. And many of these things we do not have control over. Some of them we do. Some of them we have a minimal control of some things, the choices that we can make in how we exercise these. But in many cases, it's beyond our control. This is how life operates. This is how life is. And it was this way long before we were born into the world. So every purpose and every activity under heaven that is done here on earth, he is saying there is a time and a season for it. The phrase that he uses again here, which we see is typical in writing in Ecclesiastes, under heaven or under the sun, is talking about life here on earth. That from the earthly viewpoint, as we live here, we are under heaven, we are here on earth. And the things, these are the activities that take place here on earth in our lifetimes. So, and he says, to everything there is a season, a time for every purpose. And so he begins to list out a list of these, which we read, and there are 14 pairs here that he gives. And there are opposites. In each one of these pairs, there is an opposite to the other side. So there is a time to be born. There is a time to die. And when you look at your life, you begin to see that for every positive thing that happens in your life, you could say there is a negative thing that also sooner or later comes out. But you can turn that around and you say for every negative thing that happens in your life, there is also a positive. I think that is one of the reasons that people like this reading is because, like for example, now when we are going through some difficult times, we can read this with the idea that, yes, we're going through that time of mourning right now, but there is going to be a time of laughter. Life has a balances out when we see the whole picture. So he is drawing, though, a comprehensive picture of life. When you think of 14 pairs of opposites, the Hebrew people put a lot of importance symbolically on numbers like 7, for example. That you have the 7 days of the week. And there are many times in the Bible that 7 becomes a symbolic meaning to it that is a complete number. And yet here you have 14, which is 7 plus 7. So it is designed in a way to suggest that what he is presenting here is life as a whole. And he is laying it out in a way that we can all see that these are common things that happen in all of our lives. Now, you may not every single thing have experienced in your life personally, but many of them you have or will, and so they're very true to life. They're very realistic things that he lays out for us here. So beginning in verse 2, he says, there is a time to be born and there is a time to die. So obviously these are the bookends of life, so to speak. That is the beginning and the end of life. And everything else that he is going to mention takes place in between that. Another translation of it is a time to give birth and a time to die. But there is an appointed time. There's a fixed time for this in life. There is a time when each one of you was born, each one of us. And there will be a time that each one of us will die. And in its proper time. So that is his point that he is making. There is a time to plant, and there is a time to pluck up what is planted. So from an agricultural view, that is, you were involved with planting, that there's the time that you would plow the field and plant the seeds, and then there would be the harvest time, and you would go back through and pluck up the plants at the end of the season. There is a time to kill, and there is a time to heal. Now, this might be in reference to agriculture, that there comes a time that your little puppy dog, you know, gets a broken leg, and so you take him to the vet to get his leg fixed. And later on, he swallows your pantyhose or something like that, and then it wraps around his intestines, and you take him to the surgery to get that out. But eventually, he gets to the point that he has, he cannot walk, his leg is broken, he's in pain, and so you eventually take him back and have him put to sleep. So there is a time to heal, but there is a time to kill in various ways. Life has both of these meanings. There is a time to break down and there is a time to build up. So there are buildings, for example, that when they are being built, it is the beginning of a person building a home to live in or a building to be a business. But then there is a time that same building is torn down. There's a time to weep, but there is a time to laugh. There's a time to mourn, but there is a time to dance. So life has good times in it, but it also, we know, has many very sad times in it. Life is filled with weddings and funerals, and those occasions like that, where Jesus went to the wedding feast in Cana, and he enjoyed that time at the wedding feast. But life isn't always going to be that type of a celebration. Life is also often going to be the sad times, and we cannot stop it. We cannot control. And life moves on. It keeps moving on from one experience, from one time or season to the next, and we cannot hold it in place in time. That's why many times we say things like, where did all the time go? Or, there's just not enough hours in the day. Or, I don't have enough time to do this that I need to do. So there's a time for that. There's a time to cast away stones. There is a time to gather stones. Many times they would gather stones to build a stone wall. They would remove the stones to have the field where they could plow it and grow their crops. There's a time to embrace, and there is a time to refrain from embracing. There are times that we will go up and put our arms around a person and greet them and hug them. And we have that love and that bond with that person and we embrace them. But there are other times and other people in life that we will not do that. We would refrain from embracing. It wouldn't be appropriate with that person or at that time or in that context. So there's a time for it and there's a time to avoid doing it. There's a time to gain. There's a time to lose. There's a time to keep. There's a time to throw away. And we can understand that that is one that we have some control over, don't we? Because there is a time to throw it away. And this is something Karen and I, we go back and forth all the time because I always want to keep it. And Karen wants to get rid of it. You know, you've already read that book before. Why not take it and get rid of it? So there is a choice that we have in life to keep things or to throw them away. There's a time to tear and there's a time to sow. Now sometimes people, in times of grief, they would tear their garments. We read about that in the Bible. People would rend their garments. But at other times is the time to sew the garments. There's a time to keep silence. There's a time to speak. We can understand that also, that there are times that we need to keep silent. There are things that are in confidence. There are things that we may be aware of that we do not want to spread around or talk about to other. It's not the appropriate time for it. But on the other hand, there is a time that we need to speak up. And we need to make our words known. And there is a time to say things. There is a timing. There is a wisdom and an art to that of being able to say the right thing at the right time, at the right moment. But he said there's a time to love and there's a time to hate. There's a time of war and there's a time of peace. And I think that the birds who sang this song are the... It actually was gone back to a folk singer, Pete Seeger, who put this to the music of the song, Turn, Turn, Turn. And it was in the time of the wars, but it was, there can be a time of peace. And they rewrote the words a little bit there to make it come out the message that they were looking for. But these are immortal words, really, that the writer here, the preacher, he shared these things about life, that life is constantly changing. It's filled with good moments and sad moments, and they all seem to balance out in the end. So he says in verse 9, what profit has the worker from that in which he labors? Now this is a question that he had asked in the very beginning of Ecclesiastes. He began in chapter 1 and verse 3. He said, what profit has a man from all his labor in which he toils under the sun? And now that he has gone through these 14 pairs of activities in life that pictures life as we know it in the full, he says, what profit has the worker from that in which he labors? In other words, from all our activity in life, what profit is there in all of this? A time to be born, a time to die, a time to plant, a time to pluck up, a time to heal, a time to kill, and so forth. What profit is there in life when we look at it from that? And the answer that he is looking for is none. There is none. There is no profit in it, because when you look at that, you have 14 positive things and 14 negative things. And if you do the math on that, if you have plus 14 and minus 14, What does it come out? It comes out to be zero. So when we look at life like that, we can look at it as, that really is depressing when we think of life in that sense, that what profit has the worker from that in which he labors? But that's not really what Solomon has concluded about life, as we will see. But that's one viewpoint. That is one view that if we, as Solomon was suggesting in the earlier chapters there, that in life we have a tendency to, we want to do all of this in our own way and establish our own identity, and we want to make a name for ourselves. We want to gain all the wisdom. We want to have all the pleasures. We want to check off the bucket list of all the different things in life that we want to do. And yet at the end of the day, it is vanity of vanities. What have we really accomplished by that, if that's all we have lived for? So what profit is? It all depends on timing. And that is his point. That each one of these things has a purpose. And that as we look at life and we begin to think about this in a deeper way and reflect on it, we begin to see that this did not happen by accident. He says in verse 10, I have seen the God-given task with which the sons of men are to be occupied. Notice that he says this is God-given. So it is based on the fact that God created life. He has a purpose in life. He orders life. Things do not happen by random or by chaos in life. There is a purpose. The way that life works. Now, we may not always be able to see it clearly, but yet when we look at it and stand back and look at it as he is doing, it is God-given. I have seen the God-given task with which the sons of men are to be occupied. He, that is God, has made everything beautiful in its time. Also, he has put eternity in their hearts, except that no one can find the end, except no one can find out the work that God does from the beginning to the end. Now, here is really a profound observation that Solomon is giving here. And this is the second time that he has done this. As he is writing about this, it is like he is writing about life, and this is how a lot of people, we live life, but then when you stand back and look at it, there is an observation that becomes clear. And so he says, he, that is God, has made everything beautiful in its time. There's evidence as we look at the incongruities of life and the things that at first don't seem to make any sense, that all of these experiences, they come and go. We're here today, we're gone tomorrow, and the ups and downs of life, it just doesn't seem to make any sense. But he says, no, it really does make sense. There is evidence here that this is God-given. And where does that come from? Well, it doesn't come from our own experience. It doesn't come from our own impressions or feelings. It comes by tradition or by revelation that has been handed down and passed down to us. From the Hebrews' point of view of the Old Testament, they placed a lot of significance on tradition, that the generation that had come before them, the wise people of that, would pass things down. But ultimately, it went back to the account of creation in the beginning that was recorded by Moses, that we find in Genesis chapter 1, that in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth. Now, this is the very foundation that has been pulled the rug out from under us in our society today through the teaching of evolution and through these findings of science to try to question and call in question the Genesis creation account that God is the creator of life. God is the one. This world did not happen through chance, random events, but it happened because God created it. And so he says that he has made everything beautiful in his time. It's created. And at the end of that creation account in Genesis chapter 1, it said God looked at everything that he had made and it was very good. It was beautiful. Now the word beautiful, it also means appropriate. He has made everything appropriate in its time. There's a time to be born. There's a time to die. It all has an appropriate purpose and timing. Timing is everything in life. God made it that way. He has put eternity in their hearts. And this is a very interesting word in the Hebrew language, olam, but it refers to that which goes beyond time, that which is in the future, or that is too distant for us to see it. In other words, we can see life here under the sun, and we know some of these things to be true, but there is a vision that goes out beyond that, looking beyond what we can see in this life. That is what we would say eternity. God has put eternity in their hearts. That is to say that God has created each one of us in a way that as we live here, there is a yearning that we have deep within us for something beyond this life. That as we live here and we experience this feeling that he has described, and he's saying, what profit is there under the sun of all the toil and the labors that we do? Because one generation comes and another generation goes, and it seems that there's just a cycle of life that keeps on going, and all the times come and go in our lives so quickly we can hardly sort them out. We can never really cling hold of one time that is a good time before it moves on to something else that is sad and troublesome in our life. But he says that he has put eternity in their hearts. So there is a longing that exists within the heart of man for a possibility of life and meaning out there beyond this life that goes beyond what we would say an agnostic view of life. A person that just looks at life and then says, well, this is all I can prove. This is all I know that there is. And so I'm going to try to enjoy it and eat, drink, and be merry and get the most out of life that I can. But he is saying there is something in man that questions and goes beyond that and says, no, this is not all there is to existence. There is more that is out there beyond what we can see. And that is what we would describe in the Bible as faith. To live by faith. To believe that the account of creation that has been given and handed down to us, and by inspiration of God, that this is the explanation of life that brings everything into perspective, that can help us to understand it in the proper way. So he says there, he says, except that no one can find out the work that God does from beginning to end. In other words, man by himself, we cannot put it all together. We can try to look at life and we can try to I'm going to find all the meaning of life and all the answers to life that is there. But he is saying, we cannot do this. We cannot find out the work that God does from beginning to end. Now that is to say that God has a purpose. And that when God created this world, as he did in Genesis chapter 1, he had a purpose that would span throughout eternity. And yet we cannot discover that on our own. It has to be revealed to us. And that's exactly why we have the Bible. That's what the Bible does. It reveals to us that God has a purpose, an eternal purpose, when he created the universe, and that his purpose was in the mind of God before it was creation was even carried forth, and that it is the plan of human redemption and eternal salvation through Jesus Christ. But he's saying that no one can find out the work that God does from beginning to end. Man cannot, on his own, discover this without God revealing it. So he said, I know that nothing is better for them than to rejoice and to do good in their lives, and also that every man should eat and drink and enjoy the good of all his labor. It is the gift of God. There are three things here that he tells us about life that we should focus on in life. The things that we should focus on are the things that can give us happiness in all of this. And when we go back to those 14 pairs, there is a positive there in each one. So we can focus on those things that are given in life that are good times, like the weddings, like the births, like the times of laughter that we can have, like when Jesus went to the wedding feast and there was laughter there and there was happiness and joy. And he says that we should rejoice and do good in their lives. And third, also he said that every man should eat and drink and enjoy the good of all his labor. It is the gift of God. So it is a way of looking at life, that is, to focus on life in a way that we can have joy in life. And as we live our lives, we do good. We try to make our life count for good in a positive way. Helping people. Speaking to people in a way of kindness and uplifting, and to then enjoy the food and the drink and the things of blessings of God that he has given to us, and to recognize this is the gift of God. This isn't just because I went out and worked hard and I have this now that belongs to me. It is the gift of God. Life is the gift of God. The way that we can enjoy it is to enter into the presence of God and accept his blessings, and that it is his planning and his purpose that we are seeing and we are experiencing. So in verse 14 he says, I know that whatever God does, it shall be forever. Nothing can be added to it and nothing taken from it. God does it that men should fear before him. That which is already is has already been, and what is to be has already been, and God requires an account of what is past. Now here's another profound verse that he is pointing out how we need to see life in order to enjoy it. Man is limited. We have to accept the fact that we are very limited in what we can do in life. We cannot change the times and the seasons. But God, on the other hand, is infinite. Whatever God does, it shall be forever. It will last forever. What we do will not last forever. It's only a drop in the bucket. But what God does, it will be forever. And nothing can be added to it. It is complete. It is perfect. The work of God. What God does cannot be added to or taken away from. And God has designed the way things operate in the world so that we should fear before Him. That word fear, it means to reverence God. Life is arranged in a way that we would cause us to lead us to fear God and reverence Him. The very fact that life is moving from one experience to another so quickly, and life is brief, and from the day we're born to the day we die, we experience all these things, but then life comes to an end. The fact that it is arranged as it is this way should cause us, and was intentionally designed by God for this purpose, to lead men to fear God. To conclude that we are infinite. We're not infinite. God is the one who is infinite. Life is from the gift of God. We have all these things. Everything is beautiful in its time as God. We might say, I wouldn't change a thing the way life is, because God designed it this way for our enjoyment. But He also designed it so that we would fear Him. What if everything in life was happy times? There was no time for sorrow. There was no time for grief. There was nothing but positive experiences in life was all that we would ever experience. We would have no reason to fear God. God designed life to remind us of our limitations here on earth, so that we would learn to be dependent upon Him. It's like a little child who comes up into his father's arms and he trusts his father to be safe in his father's arms. That's how we need to look at God in our lives. We are not able to find all the meaning of life. We're not able to conquer this world and put it in our arms and say, I have solved all the answers. I've solved all the problems. I am successful. Look at me. God did not want that. He did not want to allow it to be that way. So it's arranged in a way that we have within us a longing for eternity. Something beyond this life. And as we look at the work of God, which we cannot fully fathom, but there is a providence of God that is at work, that obviously this world has an order to it. And it was here long before we arrived. Life is kind of like when you come into a movie in the middle of it, and you don't really know what is going on at that time, but you watch a little bit of it and think, this looks like a good story. I would like to go back and watch this from the beginning. But our life is like that. We are in this world, and all of the experiences that are happening, we don't see the whole picture. God is back where He can see the purpose of everything from the end to the beginning, from the beginning to the end. And he says here that God requires an account of what is past. Now, as he is describing this and talking about, the first thing that comes to mind is that God requires a judgment. God has in plan a day of judgment that is coming, and that there is going to be that coming in life. But he also is suggesting that it is God who is going to take care of all of these questions, that the work of God that He is doing, it is perfect, it is forever, and God requires an account of what is past, that all things that God has done are part of His plan. So, as we look at life in that way, He says that this is how men can see the beauty of life, that there's nothing better for them than to rejoice and to do good in their lives, and that every man should eat and drink and enjoy the good of his labor. It is the gift of God. When we look at the New Testament, the Bible as a whole, we have so much more revelation for us through Jesus Christ to help us understand that in order for God to answer these things for us, He sent His own Son down from heaven to die for us so that we can have that eternal life and the promise of that. We do not have to live our lives in the limited scope that He was suggesting at the beginning of this book, that even though life brings with it many experiences, we need to focus on those things that we can definitely identify. These are gifts of God, and that reminds us of our purpose here that we have in this life, to honor and serve Him. We're going to stand and sing the invitation that has been chosen. If there are those today, anyone who is subject to Jesus and His invitation to come to Him, to repent of your sins, to believe the gospel, to believe that Jesus died on the cross and rose from the dead, and that He will come again to receive us unto Himself when we are found faithful, we invite you to come as we stand together and sing. All to Jesus.